Hi, everybody. This is the Ramble Redhead Show, and I'd like to welcome you today. Today, I have a great person I would like to introduce you to. Her name is Heather, and she is part of the Call to Duty tour that, as you well know, and listening to the previous episodes, we talked with Alexander, and we also talked to Jared, and we also talked with Fred. And now we're going to get a woman's perspective. Her name is Heather, and she was in the Air Force, and we're going to hear a little bit about her story. And what I'd like to do is welcome Heather to the program. Hello, Heather.
Hello.
How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
Great. And, well, we have lovely snow here in Indiana. How's the weather down in Texas?
It's about 75 today.
Oh, you're lucky. Okay.
It's winter. It's cold.
Oh, shut up. Well, it's been really a mild winter. I've been really happy, but today it's snow and it's crappy and yucky. But, I'd like to welcome you to the program.
Thank you.
And what I'd like to do is just to give a recap to our listeners who may be listening to the show for the first time, what the Call to Duty Tour is. And I was wondering, would you mind explaining a little bit about the program for me?
Sure. It's a national college speaking tour, and basically we're going to go around and talk about our experiences while we're in the military with the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. And we really just want to open up a dialogue with certain people on college campuses to renew interest and shed some light and attention on the issue and change some minds if we can, because we're going to mostly conservative universities, and just tell our stories, and that's about it, basically.
Okay, great. Well, what I'd like to do is just get a little history about yourself. So I was just wondering, where were you born, and where did you get raised?
I was born and raised in Virginia. Roanoke, Virginia is kind of in the southwest part in the mountains.
Okay. And what was that like growing up?
I'm sorry, what?
What was that like growing up in that area?
Oh, it was fine. Virginia really isn't that conservative. Really, in the rural areas,
mm-hmm.
it's like that. But in the larger city areas, it's actually, I think, very kind of an eclectic place. You get all kinds of walks of life and people, and people are pretty. I've never actually had any issues or anything with telling anybody that I was a lesbian in Virginia.
Okay, great. And speaking of that, how old were you when you first, had feelings for another woman?
Had feelings, probably.
Came to realize that you were.
I think I started to think about it when I was about 15.
Okay.
But I really didn't have a girlfriend until I was about 17.
Okay. Well, you told me on the phone what happened. I was just, would you mind sharing, what happened that first time when you were 15?
I was in an ice cream parlor with my older sisters, and one of the girls who worked there hit on me. And I really didn't know what was going on, but my older sisters knew, and they were just like, "That girl just hit on you." And I was like, "Really? Oh." And that's when I started to think about it, because it really, I didn't really have a problem with it. And that's what, I guess, planted the seed in my mind for me to think about it, because it didn't bother me, so.
Oh, wow. Okay. And then you said 2 years later is when you first, had your first girlfriend.
Yes.
And did you meet her through school then, or?
Yes, we were friends in school together.
Oh, cool. How did that go about, talking about it? Did that scare you at all?
No, because we had other friends who had said that they were bisexual, and it never came up like it was a weird thing.
Okay.
Like, we had another friend in high school who said that he was gay, and to us it really didn't, it didn't seem like it was that big of a deal.
Right. Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that, because, see, that's one of the things that I, because I'm an older person, I'm 41, I'm ancient history. But, see, one of the things that amazed me is that, of course, when I was 18 years old, if you were gay or lesbian at that time in the 80s, it was like a big taboo, and it was not talked about, and so it's a big issue, and I always hoped that the younger generation, the generation today that you're part of now, it hoped there would be a better situation. And see, I've talked to some people, and it has, and I talked to some others, and it hasn't. So I'm really glad that for you, it really was, you know, and you had friends that were accepting of the, you know, the lifestyle or the person. And so that's really good. I'm glad to hear that.
It was really great. I mean, I learned later that there were a few ignorant people that said some nasty things about me and my friends kind of behind our backs, but I never heard it at the time, so it was fine with me. I mean, and it's fine with me now that happened. I'm just like, well, it didn't bother me then, so what does it matter?
Right.
You know?
Well, good. I mean, so I'm glad that, because a lot of people, unfortunately, a lot of gay and lesbian people don't get that, and I'm really glad that you did. I mean, you had a positive experience, so that's good. So then, so how long were you with that girl then?
Gosh, not very long, I guess.
No, okay.
I don't really even remember. I guess a few months.
Okay. So then you were 17, and then you obviously graduated high school then, and...
No, actually, I just kind of quit for a while.
You did?
Yes. I thought I was going to graduate early, and so I left school when I was 17. I just turned 17.
Okay.
And then I ended up not, because I thought I was going to take some community college classes that would count as joint credit.
Right.
Like for high school and college, and then that's the way that I had planned to graduate. But then I started to go to the classes, and it was just too much freedom, I guess. And I never showed up to class, and I never finished. And I thought that I wanted to be an actress, so I went to North Carolina School of the Arts in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And I lived in North Carolina for about a year, and then I came back to Virginia and just tried to take community college classes, and it just never panned out. And finally, I went back and my stepdad is on the school board, and so he asked if I could just write a paper and to get my high school diploma. And so I wrote a paper about my life experiences, and then they gave me my high school diploma.
Oh, wow.
So it's kind of a long way about me getting it, but yeah.
Wow. So what was the acting thing like?
I really enjoyed the actual art form of it, but the politics of it just weren't for me.
Oh.
I think that anybody who has that chosen profession, it's just so difficult because, I mean, you can work hard and work hard your entire life, and you may never get anywhere. And
right.
Like, for example, with me, I want to be a lawyer. So I know that if I go to law school and I do well in law school, well, then I'm going to be a lawyer, and I know I'm going to have a paycheck no matter what. So
right.
It's just kind of a sure thing. But with that, there's just a lot of insecurity, and I wouldn't be able to do that, I don't think.
Yeah, there's a lot of people saying, oh, I'm an actor, but I'm a waiter, I work at the hotel, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like you said, you know, if you're a lawyer and you're going to law school, yeah, you're going to be a lawyer, but if you go to college, you go to acting classes, and you do all this stuff, that just means that you just spend a lot of money, and you're hopefully going to be an actor. So, yeah, I can understand that. So what year was that when you finally did get your degree then, or your high school degree?
1999.
Okay. And then the following year, you decided to go into the Air Force.
Right.
Okay, and what... Okay, now, let's back up one more second here. I forgot to ask this question. So, obviously, you had feelings for other females on the 15, 17, you know, age. So, when did you come out to your family?
When I had my first girlfriend, I told my mom.
Okay.
And...
How was she?
Really upset.
Well, she was.
Yes. And I think she's very religious, and I think she was concerned about how her church sees that kind of thing and what people would say. And I mean, I come from a very religious family. My uncle is a preacher, and every generation of my family has had a minister or preacher.
Right.
So I think she was just really... more worried about what other people thought, and then how she was supposed to think, and I think she pretty much told everybody else in my family for me. And once they were okay with it, they were just like, oh, okay, then she was okay with it.
Okay.
And she, but it took a long time for her to kind of get around to the point that she is now, because first she was okay with it, but she didn't want to talk about it. And then I kind of kept having to push her and say, you know, I don't, you know, it's obviously unequal with the way that you talk about my sister's husbands, and if you talk about me and my girlfriend, it's different. And then she'd be like, oh, yeah, I see that you're right, you know, after we would, you know, talk about it a lot. And then now she's at the point now where she's just taken over the PFLAG meetings and stuff.
You're kidding.
Well, she's not involved in the PFLAG, but, I mean, she's an advocate herself. So that's like an example, I guess.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, see, just to let you know, I interviewed another couple, and it's for those who maybe are new listeners, the interview is with Tim and Jean, and if you get a chance, Heather, I would like you to listen to them, but especially the first part with Jean, all of them basically, but I had several interviews with both of them, and one of the great things that I really liked about Gene's story was that, see, his mother was the same way. He came out to her, and she was like, oh, my gosh, you know, what's going to happen? You know, how are people going to react? And so it was a big thing for her and, of course, for him. But then what happened was, as time progressed, is that his relationship with Tim, and they were together for 20, or they've been, not that it's ending, but, I mean, they've been together for 24 years now.
Wow.
And so it's just amazing. And so the thing is that one of the things that his mother realized as the years went on was that the relationship that lasted the longest, that was the strongest, was their relationship. And so, and then the funny thing was that he was in the Navy, or both of them were in the Navy, and the funny thing is that when the mother went to go visit a certain area where I think they must have had a Navy base there, that she actually met a bunch of Navy people, and she actually thought that they were gay. And so what she did is she invited these guys to her house, and her husband made them all dinner. And then during the conversation, she mentioned about her son was in the Navy, and then she mentioned about him being gay and that she was okay with it. And so she did a complete change as well. So, I mean, it was just amazing that, you know, and one of the things that we did talk about as well is that, see, once a person who may have, you know, feelings like that or homophobic feelings, that once they know the person and really know them as a person, then they do change their mindset. And so I think it's really great that your mom, you know, did what she did. So, well, that's cool.
I have a brother who's gay also, and when he came out, he received a whole different response than the one that I got. And my mom was just like, well, do you have a boyfriend? Well, that's a shame you don't have a boyfriend. I just want you to be happy. Go
find one.
So it was totally different.
Wow. Well, I mean, you paved the way.
Yeah.
So you paid the price, but I'm sure your brother probably really appreciates what you did. I mean, a lot of young people, they don't want to come out. They're afraid to tell the family. They're afraid to tell their friends and, you know. But it's nothing to be ashamed of. You are who you are, and you have to be happy with yourself because, you know, life is too damn short. So,
right.
So, well, I'm really glad. I'm really happy for you then. Okay, so then, we'll flash forward here. So you, it's 2000, and you decided to go in the Air Force. And I'm just curious, what made you decide to do that?
The big thing was I really knew where I wanted to go with my goals, as far as I knew that I wanted to be a lawyer. I didn't really think that it was possible yet, but I knew what I wanted, but I just couldn't get there. And I knew that I couldn't get there. I just didn't have the self-discipline or the drive to do it. Every time I attempted to take a class or something, then I would be late and I would turn in assignments late or I wouldn't show up at all, and I would always just do very poorly as far as discipline-wise. With grades, I was fine. It's just I just couldn't do stuff on time. And so I thought I wanted the self-discipline that I thought I would get from going into the military. And I wanted money for school also and to have some travel experiences, which I never got that. But I got money for school, which is good.
Right. Okay, so you went to Lackland then for basic training, right?
Right.
Okay, and that's about 6 weeks, right?
Yes.
Okay, and then you went to your your tech school then, and what career field for our listeners did you go into?
Russian linguist.
And what made you decide to do that?
I wanted to be a linguist. I was just interested in languages, and I picked Russian because it was close to Bulgarian, which I was trying to learn Bulgarian in my free time because I had made some friends who were Bulgarian, and I just picked Russian because all that, it was just similar. I didn't really have any affinity to Russian or anything.
And how long was your tech school?
I spent a year learning Russian, and then I spent another year waiting on my security clearance, doing nothing, and then I spent another 4 months after that doing the actual technical job training, which I guess is my real tech school, the 4 months that I learned how to do the job. The Russian is just, I need to have the base of knowing the Russian language, and then after that I learn the job aspect.
So how well do you speak Russian now?
Actually, I've forgotten, I'd have to say I've forgotten probably about 20%, but I keep it up because I volunteer for a refugee resettlement program, and there's some Russian refugees here in San Antonio, and I translate for them as they come in, and they're newly arrived, and I go and help them get their documents taken care of and show them about the grocery store and, you know, just the basic things, teach them about credit here and things like that. So.
Oh, wow. Well, that's cool.
I try to keep up my language
yeah.
as much as I can.
Well, that's good. Can you say, I'll put you on the test, say something like, I love the Ramble Redhead Show, and no, I'm just kidding.
Then the Rabbit's Ramble Redhead Show.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't ask the other guys. I should ask them. Hey, say something in the foreign language that you know. So, oh, that's cool. That's really cool. Okay. Okay. Moving on. So you did the tech school. I mean, now let me ask you this question: during the time that you're in basic training or in tech school, did you? I mean, were you out to anybody then, or did you date anybody? Did you see anybody outside of the base at all, or anything like that?
I was really scared to say anything to anybody.
Right.
I had a friend who was discharged in her Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Actually, she wasn't discharged. She was discharged before Don't Ask, Don't Tell, but she was discharged for being a lesbian. And she had told somebody that she trusted, and they had told on her. And so she gave me this whole speech about don't trust anybody, even if you think that they're your friends. They're still in the military, and so I was really scared when I went to tell anybody anything.
Okay, back up. When you said that, right when you said something, it kind of our connection wasn't very good. So you said that she told somebody. You said,
yeah, I had a friend, and she had told, she had confided in someone else that she worked with that she was gay.
Right.
And then they told on her to her supervisor, and then she was subsequently discharged.
Oh, okay, okay. I just wanted to clarify. So,
yes.
Wow. So, yeah, that's too bad. And so she was a good, I mean, did she know about you then?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we were friends before I went into the military.
Oh,
She was the one who told me, don't trust anybody, you know, because
right.
you never know what's going to happen and this and that.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened to Alexander. I mean, he did the same thing. He confided in someone, and then they went right behind his back and told somebody else. So it was really,
right.
it was really sad.
So most people didn't know. I'd say like the first 2 years I was in, maybe 1.5 years that I was in, and I really didn't. The only people who I really told were people who told me first.
Okay.
So, if somebody told me, confided in me that they were gay, then I thought I could trust them and tell them about myself too.
So, did you have a lot of people tell you that?
Actually, surprisingly, I think that there are a lot more gay linguists than the military probably cares to admit.
Yeah,
more linguists discharged.
Because if you look at the website for the Call to Duty, which the website, just for people to know, is calltodutytour.org, and you can read about all the different speakers that are going to be participating in, and basically every one, well, probably the exception would be Fred, is that basically most of them are all linguists. So It looks like. Well, maybe Tim. I guess Tim wasn't, but most of them, you know, were linguists. So I didn't realize that it was such a popular field for the gays and lesbians. So why do you think that is? Why do you think that is?
I don't know if it's more popular for gays and lesbians as much as maybe people feel a little bit more comfortable in themselves in that career field rather than maybe say in like if they're a cop or something. And if they're a cop, they'd probably hear a lot more harassing statements every day, and they probably would feel a lot more scared to ever say anything about it. And I think in military intelligence, you have a little bit, you're surrounded in an environment where people are a little bit more intellectual, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think people feel a little bit more comfortable, and maybe that's, you know, to their demise, because it's still the military, you know?
Yeah. So. Well, I mean, I'm sure you probably talked to Jared about his story, and it was just amazing, because he basically came out to everybody, and they were all like, hey, I don't have a problem with that. You know, as long as you do your job, that's all that matters. But I mean, that's totally the exception to the rule. So,
yeah. And I was friends with Jared actually when we were stationed at Goodfellow together, and I knew him at DLI. But we had mutual friends, and it was really the people who I was friends with there. I mean, I really didn't have any problem. I had a really good experience at Goodfellow and at DOI until, you know, it wasn't until I was stationed in San Antonio that I really had any problems at all.
Right. Okay. So that's how you met him in the first place, and that's how you got part of the organization was through him, right?
Yes. He invited me to join the tour because he just called me out of the blue, and I hadn't talked to him in a couple of years, and asked me if I wanted to do it, and I was like, yeah, absolutely.
Well, great. Okay, well, we're getting a little ahead of ourselves on that part of it. So then, what year, so after you got done with your tech school, so what happened then? So you went from, was that Goodfellow that you were at then? For your tech school?
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay.
Yes.
And so then after that, then you went to San Antonio, is that right?
Right, I was stationed at Lackland.
Right, okay. And then, well, basically, I'm reading your bio, but basically you had said that there was some type of harassment or, can you explain to the listeners what happened that?
The general environment that I worked in, there was about five or six other people who worked there, and they pretty often on a regular basis would tell gay jokes or racist jokes or sexist jokes, and I really didn't do anything until they made me assistant supervisor. And then whenever my supervisor was gone, of course, which was pretty often, I was in charge. And whenever I heard any of those sort of, you know, so-called jokes, then I would give somebody a warning, and then I would write them up. And then nothing was really ever done about it. And I kept trying to investigate and find out why nobody was ever doing anything about it. And one person, actually, one particular supervisor actually told me that, oh, well, nobody's allowed to be gay in the military, so what harm are they doing, basically, is is what they had said. But as far as the racist jokes and sexist jokes, you know, they didn't really have any, they couldn't say anything about, you know, they were just wrong on all counts, of course, you know. Mm-hmm. With everything, and nothing was just done. So
what did you say when that person said that to you about, well, what's the big deal, you know, they don't have gays in the military? What did you say?
I was just shocked. I was at a loss for words. I just walked away. I didn't know what else to say. I mean, what could I have said? It was a E9, you know, so.
Oh, chief, okay.
Yeah.
Wow. You think a chief would be a little smarter than that. But, but, you know, there are a few narrow-minded people in the military. Just a few. Okay, so then after that happened, what's the next thing that happened?
I kept doing that and writing people up. And after nothing was done for a few months, probably like 3 or 4 months, I asked to be changed to a different office. And they said, said no. Basically, they said I was too vital, and it was also because the other people I worked with, they didn't feel that they could that they had anyone to take over my job because they didn't think that anybody was mature enough to handle the position. And so at least they knew that much. But then I asked to be stationed somewhere else, and they said no to that request also. And so I really just didn't think that I had any way out. And at the time, there's a thing called Pallas Chase where you can switch from active duty to the reserve.
Right.
But everyone had said, oh, that's so hard, that's so difficult to do that, and it takes forever. I mean, I think it takes like a year for the people who I knew who actually successfully transferred. It took so long that I just didn't even consider that an option.
Okay. So what did you do then?
After that, I started to have problems with anxiety, like going to work and everything. And one day in particular, I had a really stressful day at work. I was on a 12-hour shift, but we had a situation happen where I couldn't leave work, which happens sometimes. And so I had been there for 24 hours. And I was going out to my car, and I had an anxiety attack, like a panic attack. And I'd never had anything like that before in my life, and I didn't know what was going on. It kind of felt like a heart attack.
Wow.
So I went to the hospital, and they said, oh, you didn't have a heart attack. You had a panic attack. You had an anxiety attack. And so they sent me to go see the military counselor. But in the military, you don't have any doctor-patient confidentiality.
Yeah.
And I knew that going in, so I knew that not to say anything. And basically I just talked a little bit about the people at my work, but I mean, I couldn't say much, you know, because also I had a top secret job, so I couldn't really give too many details about my job too.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
I couldn't talk about, you know, any problems I was having with my girlfriend or anything. So we didn't really talk about much. And, he said, oh, well, I'll give you some medication for your anxiety if it doesn't get better in 3 weeks. And 3 weeks later, it didn't get any better, and I went to go see him again, and they had sent me to somebody else. And I asked, you know, where was the previous doctor, and they said, oh, well, he's changed duty stations. He was stationed somewhere else. And then this new doctor didn't believe in medication, and he was like, we're just going to figure out what the problem is. You just need to exercise more, I think, and quit smoking. And so I tried to quit smoking. I cut down a lot, and it just didn't get any better. And so after about 6 months, I just completely was fed up. I said, you know, this is deteriorating my health, and I'm not happy. I haven't been happy, you know, and I just dreaded every single day I had to go into work, you know. Just I didn't feel like I had any kind of avenue for recourse. So I ended up writing a letter to my commander, telling her all the reasons, you know, that I was doing it, and then eventually saying at the end of the letter, you know, I'm a lesbian, and that's why I'm coming out, because I don't feel like I have any other choice.
Okay, so back up just a second. So you said at the time you had a girlfriend, right? Is it the one that you have now?
No.
No, it's a different one. Okay. I was just curious, how was the girlfriend, was she in the military too?
No.
Okay. So how did she feel about what was going on and how you were feeling and reacting and at the time?
That's a good question. how did she feel about it?
Well, see, the reason why I'm asking that question was I was just wondering then if she wasn't in the military, then I figured that, you know, did you think about maybe going to some type of counselor outside of the Air Force? I mean, was that even an option for you?
I ended up doing that, although I think it's kind of against the rules, but I ended up paying out, like, cash out of my pocket to do that.
Okay.
And that kind of helped me get right with my decision to leave.
Right.
Because it really, it would have been, if I decided to do that for the whole rest of the time I was in the military, you know, it would be a lot of money. But I just basically saw somebody a few times that I trusted, and I knew that the military couldn't find out what she and I talked about.
Right.
No, I mean, all they could ask was, you know, is what you talked about going to hurt her ability to do her job? And of course, you know, she would say no, and then that's all they could do. So,
right.
So I you know, opened up, and I felt more confident in what I was doing, because even my friends who were gay in the military weren't supportive of me coming out.
Really?
Yeah, I think that I think it's just like that thing where if you're putting up with something that when somebody else says that they've had enough and they ask for something more or something different, I think they just didn't really know how to react, and instead they're trying to convince me to stay in, but I don't think that they felt the full force of what I was going through because they had such great experiences in the military themselves.
Right.
And I was just unlucky. I mean, I just got a really bad situation, just, you know, out luck of the draw, I guess, because they had really great duty stations and experiences when they came out to people and things like that. So.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry you had to go through that because, you know, obviously you, I mean, just to recap a little bit for the listeners, is that just to let you know that Heather is one smart lady. She finished second in her class at Goodfellow. She's also been a very big volunteer as far as with different services and helping the not only the community and different things. So she is a very smart person in order to be in the career field that she's in. So you know, and it, you know, it's just really sad because there's so many good people that are in the military that happen to be gay, and that they get treated like crap just because they happen to be gay. That'd be like going up to every black man saying, oh, we don't like you because you're black, or Italian guy, or, you know, for whatever the characteristic of that person is. I mean, it's just wrong. And
right.
you should go by the work ethic and the kind of person that they are and the, you know, the behavior. I mean, I know a lot of straight people that were in the military that were, you know, married and cheating on their wives, getting drunk all the time. I know some people that were doing drugs. I mean, but those people could stay in every single day for 20 years, but the minute that someone says, oh, I'm gay, it's like, oh, you're gone. You know, we don't need you. And I just thought it was amazing that when, oh, we haven't, you know, I'm kind of jumping the gun, but you'll have to explain to the listeners what happened then after you finally sent out that letter, because you mentioned just briefly about they didn't want you to go because they felt that you were such a vital person for the organization. You sent the letter, and so what did they do after you sent the letter?
The first thing the commander did was she met with me, and she said that she could make it like the letter never happened because she had gone over my file, and she didn't want to lose me as an airman, and she said, I'm going to give you 48 hours to think about this, and if you change your mind, then we'll pretend like this never happened, and I'll rip up your letter, and that's it.
Wow. I didn't know that part.
I said, I've already made my decision. I mean, I've thought about it and, you know, pored over the decision, and finally, I'm really confident, and I don't think that I'm going to change my mind at all. But she still said that she wanted, you know, the 48 hours. And I really don't think that I even bothered to go and tell her after the 48 hours was over. I think I just called her secretary and left a message that said that I haven't changed my mind. And, or not secretary, I guess, assistant, or I don't know what she's called. But that was it. And then I was put into a different office very quickly. I think it was the next day, really, that I was moved into a different office. And then a few weeks later, I was talking to one of my coworkers, and they had mentioned that the Inspector General was coming, which the Inspector General is the civilian who comes around, and it's kind of the office of checks and balances in the military, to make sure that everybody's following the rules and everything's on the up and up, and the safety, you know, concerns are being followed, and, you know, morale and protocol and everything. And it's supposed to be a surprise when they come, but, I mean, of course, everybody knows when they're going to show up. And so they mentioned that the Inspector General is coming, and I said, oh, well, I really need to talk to them. I have some issues that I have to talk to them about. And the coworker was like, oh, really? What issues do you need to talk to them? And I basically said, well, it's the reason that I decided to let myself be discharged was because the failure of the administration here and the chain of command and nobody following up on my EO, which is equal opportunity violations, and that I had written up. And she was just like, oh, well, that's serious to talk to the inspector general. And I was like, yeah, but I mean, it needs to be done. I mean, you can't just let all these papers just go unanswered for. That's ridiculous. And then that was on a Monday. And then that Friday before the inspector general came, the commander called me into her office and said, and she gave me my discharge papers and said, that's it. You have until Sunday to out-process and you're discharged. You're a civilian. That's it. And everyone had told me that it would have taken 90 days, and that's the least amount of time that it would ever take anybody, and no, they can't make it any faster than, you know, 90 days or 3 months. Everybody said 3 months, too. And they'd never heard of anybody getting out earlier than 3 months. And for me, it was about 3 weeks.
Wow. Well, that's amazing. So they go from, oh, we can't afford to let you go, to, okay, you're going over here. And then they tell you, oh, it's going to take 90 days, and then it's 3 weeks later, you're a civilian.
Right.
Wow.
Like, you can't leave this office, but then once I said I was okay, then the next day I was, they found somebody to take my place, so.
Wow. That's amazing. Okay, so what year was that, when all this happened?
2003.
Okay. Well, what I'm going to do, because we're past the 30-minute mark. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and stop here, and then we'll just we'll finish this with part two. So just 1 second, Heather. Okay, everybody, this is the end of part one with Heather. So if you'd like to make any comments, please email me at rambleredhead@gmail.com. You can also go to the website, which is rambleredhead.blogspot.com, and you can check on this interview as well as many others. And make sure you post your comments. And if you have any questions or comments you'd like to give to Heather, you can email me, and I will forward them to her. And again, I would like to thank Heather for this first part, and we'll be continuing with part two right after this. So keep on listening to the Ramble Redhead Show, and thank you for your time. Bye-bye.